my story from this week.
Or your story from next week. What's going to happen, Adam? What's going to happen next week? Tell us. Go ahead.
Well, my car's going to get fixed.
No. All right. Okay, this week then.
Okay, so no, you're supposed to do the math on my story. So my car is going to get fixed next
week. Oh no, was there an accident?
Yes, with going from hockey to baseball two nights ago.
Hockey to baseball.
Yeah, so we finished at hockey. Me and my son. He's in the back seat, and we're going from the hockey rink to baseball pitching training, which we've been doing once a week.
So which hockey rink?
The ice center, which is kind of so
Sixth Road.
Yeah, Sixth Road. So
you're going up Sixth Road.
We're driving down Blundell because the batting cage is at Blundell. So the rink is close to Blundell.
I'm sure. I'm thinking of like that five tool place that you go to.
No. This is just the batting cage.
So it's not there. That's on Bridgeport, right?
Correct. Yeah.
For the people doing Google Earth at home, I'm just setting a map. So you're heading to at Blundell and Gilbert there.
Yeah. So we're just driving along, which again, the name of the streets is irrelevant, but we're just a two lane street. It's nighttime. It's raining. It's Vancouver.
What time is it?
6:30. So
terrible. It's important that because yes, it is dark, but that is a terrible time. It's actually, I find it more dangerous to drive than I do at like 10:30.
Oh yeah, there's way more. Like this is, I mean, Christmas season. It's bit like the roads are packed. Everybody seems like they're in a rush. It's all of that. Plus, it's raining and it's Vancouver, so you know the visibility isn't ideal. And so we're just driving. So it's two lanes on each side. So we're in the right lane, just kind of way.
I want to hear more of your story. I'm just trying to set the tone.
Okay.
For the listeners now. It's been a while since I've actually been to Richmond, believe it or not, but Blundell, typically, it's a two-lane road. It used to be a one-lane road. It's a two-lane road, speed limit 50 kilometers an hour. Nobody drives 50.
No, people are going, but I mean, there's so much traffic that I'm going to say maybe the fastest you could go is maybe 60 right now.
Okay, but people are doing that.
Yeah, people are doing 60.
Now, part of that, too, is unless they've changed this, is there is parking in the right-hand lane, I think at least for most of the day, there's parking and then sometimes not.
Yeah, there's definitely, at this time, there was no parking in the right lane.
Okay, just, so generally what people end up using that right lane as a temporary passing lane until the, so it's a lot of pole position going on that road. I find it to be very dangerous. Richmond, very, very dangerous.
And in this section of road we are driving, like you're right, in some points there you can park in that lane. In the section of road we are, there's no parking.
Okay.
So we're driving, and then you know as it happens, the car kind of in the left lane just ahead of us starts to make a lane change, and I think everybody can relate to this. Is that okay? The person starts lane changing, and then you start leaning on the horn because you're like, well, clearly they don't see me, and they're gonna stop. Right?
Yes.
So I'm leaning on the horn and the person does not stop. So they continue into kind of the front left, just kind of driver side door. And then just that, I guess it's probably the fender. It's considered that front left panel kind of area on the car.
Quarter panel. That's the fender. Yeah. Sorry.
Sure. So he makes impact. And then what would your reaction first be? Like if you're the driver of that vehicle and the horn is just.
So hang on. Which which part of his car made contact with you? Which part of your car first?
So the back right, because he's driving a minivan. So he's driving a minivan. So back right kind of area of his car, not the back of his car, like the side of his car, but it's a minivan. So it's longish. So I'd say the back third of his passenger side of his vehicle is impacting the front left, like driver's side of my vehicle.
Okay.
So I would think, go ahead. You go ahead.
I do want to set the tone again for the listeners. Most of this street that you're going on, the left lane, unless they've changed it and widened it, there's no left-hand turn lanes.
So no, what people there's end no up left doing turn is
you're racing along, and then someone in front of you will throw your left signal on.
Yeah,
and you last try to second. Get you want to get. God forbid you have to wait for a light, so you get around. And so I'm going to guess that's what this person was doing.
Yeah, I'm going to guess too. Again, I was in the right lane and obviously not attending to whether someone was turning left in the left lane. But we are probably 50 meters from a light, so that's certainly possible.
Okay, so how? But now this now, so they're back middle of their car hit the front of your car essentially, but yes, side to side.
Side to side, yeah. So yeah,
before I get even further, is everybody okay?
Yeah, everybody's fine.
Okay, that's the main thing. Now, how this is the important question, because this person's 100% at fault, no question.
Correct. Yeah.
How long were you driving in their blind spot?
I don't know, maybe a second. Like, I don't know. Okay. I mean, I wasn't exactly, because it was traffic, like very much like car. So I don't know. You're in someone's blind spot the whole time, basically.
Fair
right.
Enough.
So, yeah. So it wasn't like, oh, we're the two cars on the vehicle and I'm just going to decide to hang right in his blind spot. Yeah.
No, I ask you that having been in the car with you multiple times and have never noticed you to be a bad driver.
No, and I don't want to, like, again, I'm very conscientious of trying not to do that because, yes. A, I think we've all experienced making that lane change, not seeing the other vehicle, them honking, and then yanking your car back in the lane. I'm guilty of having done that before. Also, a million dodges where this happens and the guy starts changing or girl starts changing, and then you lean on the horn and they jerk back. The interesting thing about this was that not only did that, not like I saw it coming well in advance, but there's so much traffic, there's nowhere you can go. I couldn't slow down and I couldn't speed up. So I'm basically leaning on the horn just thinking, oh, please, oh, please. And there's no space to go, like the curb is right there. So I've got like a foot and a half of space. It's wet. So anyways, I veer a foot and a half to the right. He still keeps coming. Impact happens. Still doesn't jerk back. Impact is happening and still continuing on. And just like, I don't know, like bumper cars, like sort of rubs me out.
Is there an N sticker in his window?
No, this is a middle-aged man. But anyway, so then there's nowhere to go. His vehicle is bigger than mine. I'm driving, you know, a little kind of commuter car, a Honda Civic. So it's not a big, he's driving a minivan. So he basically, angles me off. My right tire then, you know, has nowhere to go. So it goes up on the curb. And then, you know, he kind of finishes off in front of me, and then I go up over the curb just with the right tire, come back down, just missed a fire hydrant by about 2 feet. So that was a close call. I was like, wow, that would have sucked if I hit the right side on the fire hydrant.
It would have been more interesting, actually, had you popped that fire hydrant off.
Well, and more from a airbag injury standpoint, because that would have been a front impact or side impact that
did
might
the airbags go off?
No airbags, because we're both traveling more or less in the same direction. So the impact on the left, even though it dented the vehicle, wasn't like a big impact. It was more the impact from hitting the curb. But even that, I mean, I'm still going straight-ish, right? So it went up and over the curb without a lot of a problem. Came down. The other guy did stop. Again, when you get out of the car in this situation, if I was 23 years old, I think I would have been livid. Like, here's where you know you've gotten old, right?
Right.
After the impact happens and, you know, the guy pulls over, so you're like, okay, it's not a hit and run. My first thought is not about, am I hurt? Is anybody hurt? I mean, my first thought was, oh, what a hassle. Like that's right. What I thought. My kid in the back.
But you knew that you and your son were not hurt though.
Oh yeah, I knew. Like number one, Jack's first words out of his mouth were, "What was that?" Like he like didn't even recognize that, and I'm like, "Oh, that's what it feels like when another car runs into you, right?"
But he was like six beers deep though.
Yeah, that's true.
A couple road pops between practices.
And then the best thing was, because he was a bit sick and fighting a cough, and we literally have to hustle out of the hockey dressing room to get to baseball like just on time. And this was the last session of this 5 weeks of pitching training. So he didn't really want to go to begin with. And he was, as soon as it happened, he's like, well, we're not going to baseball now, are we? So right. I was pretty sure he was okay. He was very much thinking about what was important, which was, hey, can I go home and sit on the couch? But the other driver was nice. And again, here's where I was going with the attitude part. Accidents happen. When I'm 25, I'm probably so mad at the other driver.
Yes.
I'm 43 now. And my mentality was just, what you gonna do? Like it happened. Yeah. I wasn't mad at all. There was zero mad. It was just, okay, what do we have to do? Exchange information, you know, call the insurance company. Like, I'm not hurt. My kid's not hurt.
I was expecting him to be a jerk or something. So he was fine too.
He was really, really much a nice guy. And he was just like, so sorry. I didn't see you in my blind spot. Just, you know, like, so he was apologetic.
McFly.
So right out. So
next as soon time as you loan me a car, you tell me it has a blind spot.
Yeah. So as soon as said that, I mean, you know, I was in the same mentality of just, I just don't want to have to deal with my car. I don't think his car really had any damage, or none that we could see anyways. But anyway, so he was a very honest guy, which I appreciate, because now in today's day and age, all I kept thinking is, how am I going to get screwed over here? Like, how am I going to call? And even when you have to call it in, I mean, I'm sure it's the same in the U.S.
You don't call the police though, right?
No. I just call the insurance company to say, you know, you have to report that you were in an accident. So there was no calling police. We got out of there as quickly as we can once we exchanged information and realized that cars were clearly drivable and nobody was hurt.
For the listeners, in British Columbia, when Adam says the insurance company, it's the insurance company.
Yeah, it's like one insurance company. It's a monopoly.
Adam has
the
same insurance company as this other guy.
And so does everyone else.
Yeah, so does everybody else. That's the deal. And so it turns out like they work very, like they ICBC works very, very hard at hopefully not paying anybody ever. Yeah. Until I get an accident and then I'm sued for $6 million. True story. I was 23, actually, no, I was younger than that. And I had the reaction I dealt with the reaction that you thought you would have when you were 23.
Yeah.
So like, it's funny you say that. I ended up pulling a U-turn when I shouldn't have on a very busy road. I got T-boned by a dude going way, like he was going 80 plus kilometers an hour in a 50 zone, which just means he's going 50 miles an hour in a 30 zone. For the Americans, and he just completely hammered, blew up my car, and I almost died. And we shut down six lanes of traffic, three going each way, and it was just a mess. And he got out of the car, and he was just screaming, like ready to fight. And like I'm covered, like head to toe, I'm covered in shattered glass, and it just like no cuts or anything. Oddly, just really weird that I didn't get killed, because he T-boned me right in the driver's side of a little soup can I was driving. 1980 Toyota Tercel hatchback.
Nice.
Bought it for $200. No reverse.
All right.
And, hence the U-turn. And so, anyways, and so he got out of the car. I'm a mess. Like I'm in a massive daze. And he's screaming at me. And I was like, and it's raining, of course, because it's Vancouver.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Well, I guess we're fighting. Okay. Here we go. And then he back. Wasn't like I threatened him and he backed down. I guess he just kind of realized maybe I shouldn't fight this guy I just about killed. That'd probably be a bad idea. You know, it would look bad on me.
Yeah.
But he ended up then suing me for $6 million. Like, that's a true story.
Wow.
Because he'd had a he had just started, like that day, you know, he had just started a snowboard T-shirt company, and
this was gonna hurt it. Yeah,
depressed after almost killing me that he ended up, his company failed, and so he figured he was probably gonna make $6 million and
right
for the lawyers.
Good math.
And so, but we had this, but he had the same insurance company as me.
Yeah,
and that's the way.
That's the way it works here, is that, you know, everybody is just in their, I mean, I'm sure it's all insurance, but everybody is just like in their own best interests. What do I do here? Right.
Well, he sues me. And so with my insurance, I don't know what you have now. I don't know what the liability is. The minimum you could have, you could have $1 million in liability.
Sure. I think it's personal. Much more than that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I had two. I went big time. I had $2 million in liability, meaning if I crash my car into a building worth $2 million and it burns down, ICBC will cover that. So this guy is suing me for $6 million, and which means ICBC has a lawyer that they assigned to me that they basically represent me for that first $2 million. Okay. But anything after that, I have to have a lawyer to represent. For that $4 million,
wow!
So because he decided on this arbitrary number of $6 million, I had to go and hire a lawyer. As I'm in the office, like I at that point, I had a car that before it got smashed was worth $200.
Right.
You can imagine the kind of nest egg I was sitting on.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh my God, like, I don't know how I'm going to hire a lawyer. I guess I'm just going to owe this guy $4 million one day. I don't know what to do. Go talk to the lawyer. As I'm sitting with the lawyer, the very first consultation, which was free, he blows a call into the other lawyer. He's like, I know this guy from the, this guy's the plaintiff. They had just settled literally an hour before that. They'd settled, and the dude walked out with like $650,000.
What?
Yeah. ICBC did not want to fight it, and so they gave him six. It was under $1 million. Whatever it was, might have been 800. It was something ridiculous. That he hit me, and he was 100% going way, way, way too fast, as everybody does on that road.
Did you get an injury claim as well?
No. No, I caused the accident. Like, it was my fault. Like, I had never been on that street before. So I was helping a buddy of mine make a short film at the time. And so I was like, you know, just starting, I hadn't gone to film school yet. And so I had showed up on that road. I'd never been on that street before, called Great Northern Way, over like 2nd and Main Street, or 6th and Main, 6th and Main over in Vancouver. And so I pulled up there at like 4 in the morning. It was the first time I'd ever been on that street. And as you can imagine, it was dead empty. Like, there was no traffic at all.
Right.
And then sometime around 11, I was tasked with going to pick up lunch for the crew. So I jumped in my car, the only knowledge in my head being that this road's empty. So I just go to pull a U-turn, and it was a soft curve, and this guy was coming around the corner like he was at, you know, IndyCar, and just T-boned me.
Right.
So I never should have pulled a U-turn across that many lanes. Like, that was 100% dumb, stupid kid thing to do, and was my fault 95%. He could have avoided it. He never hit the brakes, nothing, just kept going and happened.
Right, right.
Walked with like six figures.
But here, like, was the surprising part of the whole thing for me, and, you know, why I was a little bit gun shy after it happened, because I was thinking, you know, how in the world, like, this is pretty black and white. I'm driving along in my lane, and a guy changes lanes into me. Should be pretty black and white. But when talking to the insurance agent on the phone, the first question is, do you have a witness? Well, no, the only witness would probably be the car behind me, and it's busy, it's night. All they did was honk and be angry that we pulled over, right?
I have a witness. It's my front of my car in the middle of his car.
Yeah. And
that's the witness. I just hammered it into the left lane for no reason in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the next thing I says, so I said, you know, okay, so no, I don't have a witness, because they just honked and got out of the way. Within 5 seconds, I knew there was no possible witness. And then after that, his next question was, well, do you have a dash camera? And I'm like, nope, again, I don't have one of those.
What, although, live in Moscow?
But now, guess what I just ordered on Amazon?
Is that where we're at?
It's where we're at, for sure. It's where we're at.
Did you click the site at least?
Good question. I don't know. Maybe I did. Yeah, sure.
So
I did.
So the answer is no. Okay.
So my,
you have a dash cam. I don't blame
you. I don't have
you.
It yet. I just ordered it.
I'm pointing my finger at you, man. I don't want to live in that world.
It's the world that we're living in. It's too late.
What happens when your wife looks through it and finds where your mistress lives?
That's true. That's a problem. Yeah. So anyways.
Why is this part blank, Adam? And that's what she's going to ask you.
But here's the thing. So the next question is, okay, so you don't have a dash cam. And I said, well, explaining the story to the insurance agent, he said,
Wait, dash cam. Now,
yeah.
Do you get a discount on your insurance if you have a dash cam?
No, although they're practically free.
I would demand it. I would demand that they pay for it.
The other thing that's nice about the dash camera, just going off topic a bit, is it has a parking sort of sensor, so that if someone backs into you in a parking lot and doesn't leave a note, like, you, it immediately picks that up and saves that information. Which, again, is sad, but happens all the time here. I don't know if the rest of the world's more honest.
Does it get shopping carts?
Any decent impact, yeah. So, and I think it says it's very sensitive. But anyway, so we're talking $60 for a front and back camera. I'm like, I'm putting one on both vehicles because I'm not going through this hassle. Now, this time we were lucky.
Now, we said there'd be no photography talk today, and this is photography talk.
This is kind of photography talk. Yeah. This time I got lucky because the person, you know, called in and admitted it was 100% their fault. Like they just lane changed into me. So I got an honest person. The sad thing is, if I tell that story, because I've, you know, told it to a number of friends and people in the last couple of days, it's before I tell them that the person called ICBC and told them that it was 100% their fault, everyone kind of goes, oh, like no dash camera, no witness, you're in trouble. Because if the person just says, well, we were both lane changing and we met, then it's 50-50. Like, so,
and what happens when it's 50-50?
You're basically, I'm on the hook for my car. So correct. I have
So again, just to break down for the listener, I don't know how it works all around the world because you have different things, but this is a government run insurance company. So you do not have to insure your own car. Like that's a misnomer. Like when people go, I have to get insurance for my car. No, you do not. You have to get insurance for everybody else's car.
Right.
Right. And so what Adam has done, whatever, I don't know what it costs anymore. It used to be like $1,000 a year. Now it's
probably more than that. Yeah. It's probably closer to double that, I bet.
Okay. So it used to be about $1,000 a year to insure for $2 million, meaning, you have an accident, it's your fault, you smash into that guy, your insurance pays for that guy's car. Well, your car, you're out of luck on your car. You have to pay for your own car unless you got collision insurance, meaning you're like, you know what? I'm kind of an idiot. I'm going to smash up my own car. I'm going to also insure my car, which is more money on top of $1,000. Now, it's something I've never done, which is a function of having a $200 car. You don't spend $1,000 a year on insurance for a $200 car. But even so, my dad's attitude was always just be careful with your stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Like if you smash up, why should you have insurance for being an idiot? You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, accidents do happen. Like that's the gray area where I do recognize that, hey, maybe it's a little bit wet or snowy or something like that. So in that case, I get it. I fully get it. And so what this guy would do is he probably had, you know, collision insurance, which means he's probably got a $1,000 deductible. I don't know what that even is anymore.
They're probably less than that, but yeah.
Okay. So his insurance will cover yours. If ICBC says it's 100% his fault, his insurance will fix your car. You're out in zero money.
Yeah. So that's
what they've already called. Besides $20 for a dash cam.
Yeah, it's exactly. So they've already done it. It happened so quickly because once they reported, you know, the ICBC had already called me by the next day saying, right. Yeah, go ahead. You know, all your repairs are going to be, you know, no deductible. Everything's going to be paid for. Just go get your car fixed, which I was already doing anyways, because even if they somehow deemed it wasn't 100%, I still want my car fixed. It's like a year old car and I'm not driving around a dented car. That's just not that guy. Yeah.
So if this guy didn't have collision insurance or a conscience, what he could basically say is just, hey, we're both changing lanes.
Yep.
So
yep.
he gets dinged for half, and you get dinged for half, and everyone pays a deductible. If you both have collision or you don't, you end up paying, ICBC pays out a lot less money.
Right.
And so that's generally what they would like to happen. And so
and happens a lot. And the last time someone backed into me in a parking lot, it was a new driver about 2 years ago. I was sitting in the car with my kids, just sitting in our car, and a guy reversed into us in a parking lot, and no witness, of course, no dash camera. But he and afterwards he apologized. It was, again, a new driver, I think, went home, talked to his parents. They're like, you're not going to be able to afford insurance. He was driving a beat up car with a bunch of dings in it. And he basically just said, well, we were both moving. And as soon as you say that, unless you can prove otherwise, it's 50-50. And now I have to fix my, he didn't care about his car. So he I'm sure never fixed his. He just had a bunch of bumps in the dent. And it was just enough of a dent that it cost us $1,000.
Of course. Yeah.
So I was gun shy from that incident because, again, it was clearly the other driver's fault, but all he did was change the story after the fact. And I didn't have footage saying, you know, getting the guy to admit that this was totally my fault. And so now you're hooped. So this incident was the point where I thought the dash cam would have seen everything perfect. It was completely in the field of view of that, what would be up front camera. And then I don't have to worry. It's like, you've got that. And it's just like, all right, no worrying about the honesty of another person. Again, sadly, I bet you The lie rate, I mean, there's no way to ever verify this data, but I'm going to say at least 40% of drivers here would have probably not.
There's a way to salvage. There's a way, because first of all, I live in the real world, Adam, so I do not understand why I need a bike lock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I do understand. I want to come out of the wherever I am and have my bike still be there. That part I get.
Right.
But it's not as if I have a very common looking bike and thus, oh, someone accidentally walked off with it or rode off with it, I guess would make more sense. Somebody would have to steal my bike.
Right.
Now, but so I have to A, own a bike, and then B, I have to then purchase a lock with my own money so that nobody takes my bike.
Right.
It doesn't belong to them. That doesn't make any sense to me why I need to have a bike lock. And so it doesn't make sense to me why it cost me 25 cents to lock up my clothes at the pool. Those are my clothes. Why would you take them? Just don't take them. They're mine. I have to pay more. The thief pays zero and gets free clothes.
Right.
So like, if you break that down, that makes zero logical sense. However, I do live in the real world. And thus, I own a bike lock and I lock my stuff up at the pool, etc. But with the camera. The camera really offends me.
Yeah.
Let me change that, because I actually take pride in not being offended by anything. It upsets me because I don't want to live in that world. I like the world of, yeah, you own up to your mistakes. It makes you a better person. It makes society better. So what about this? What about, are the dash cams visible?
Are
like
they
to the
visible?
Outside? Like if I'm walking by your car and I don't know you, or if I hit your car, am I going to see that you have a dash cam?
I think for the most part, the way it looks to me is like a GPS, just like a suction cup little thing on, which would look no different than what my 3-inch GPS. It seems to look like that.
I would like them to be invisible.
Yeah, they're not invisible. I mean, I'm sure you can get ones that are more invisible, but
so
if this is $60 version is not invisible.
If this isn't a thing, yeah. We're not going to publish this part and I'm going to invent one, but it also comes with a caveat to it. Where this is when I become king of the free world, unlikely, right?
Mm-hmm.
Part of the deal will be the dash cams will be invisible. And okay. Thus, you will not know if you back into a car, you will not know if they have a dash cam or not. So you go ahead and make that claim, like the new driver there makes that claim of we're both moving. And then we find out that you were not moving. He pays triple.
Yeah. Well, and I had that discussion with someone as well. I said, when I was walking up to, you know, meet the driver and exchange information, my first thought was to tell him, like, it was dark, it was night. There's no way he'd be able to see in my car if I had a dash cam, was to say, oh, I have a dash cam. It's all on video. I didn't do that because I feel like people should just own up to it. But afterwards, I thought maybe I should have said that because they'd be more hesitant to lie. And then my next thought was, well, no, because there's no penalty for him lying. Like he could lie and then the video comes out and he's still going to end up paying the same as if he cops to it right away. There's really no penalty for lying here. So of course, I think people are more often going to lie as a result.
Yeah, but I hope most people, I live in the real world. Would you ever lie?
In this, my circumstances would definitely make it so that it would be easy to tell the truth, because the insurance penalty that I would pay, I can afford
to pay.
No,
I'm not talking about that. When you're 23, would you ever lie about that?
No, but that's...
Well, you did lie. You did break a window with a snowball, and then...
But I copped to it.
That's right.
So, no, I would, but again, it's a lot of it's about means, right? So, in that case...
No,
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is.
But I was brought up with right means. I didn't fend for myself. I wasn't like, if I could barely afford insurance, or if I was someone who was paycheck to paycheck, who couldn't, you know, had a hard time making sure, you know, my kids had clothes and food, then this scenario of me getting in an accident and now being able to not have a car to go to work, I think almost puts you in a position where you're going to lie. You're going to lie because it's a survival thing, right? So in that scenario, I don't know, because I've never experienced that. I've never been put there.
But what if the person you hit is having even more trouble feeding their
kids? But that's not how people think. They think about
that is how it is. How
I would I hope that.
I don't think I'm going to come out and say no way.
I think they're going to look at it and say, well, that guy was driving a nicer car. He can. They don't know any different unless you're telling them that at the scene. They're going to make a story up in their head that justifies them basically doing what they're going to do, which is lie.
But you would not. I'm telling you, you would not do that. You would not lie and then justify it in your own head.
I know. I agree. But I'm just saying that's in. Because of the way I was brought up, which a lot of that had to do with means. Like, no, so I.
That's nonsense because your parents are both huge liars.
No. I barely know. But you know what I mean? Though. So there is a definite, like, you know, there is a. I can never. As I was brought up, of course, but who I am is largely a part of my upbringing. And a lot of that upbringing had to do with some means. So I'd love to say, yeah, for sure, if I was poor and couldn't afford it, that I would do the right thing. But there's no way I can know if that's the case, right?
On the flip side, I was brought up with those sort of more, values as well. We didn't have a ton of money. I mean, we were fine. We had a house to live in, et cetera. But, you know, there were some lean times, definitely. But as a kid, I didn't know any better. Point being, I used to referee hockey when I was really young, starting when I was like 12 years old. That was my part-time job. Right. You know, and you'd go out. I would go out and referee like a novice game, which is, how old's novice? Like 8?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd go do a novice game, which would be 75 minutes long. And I used to get paid $2 for that.
Sweet. So
it's fine.
Right to the candy store.
Yeah. No. I would always. And you got paid cash too. That was the cool part. It was not a check at the end of the year. Some games were. Some games were. That's a long story. But usually you got paid cash at most of the times. So I remember, like, I would save up that money. And so as I got older, once I turned like 16, I was still reffing. I ref for a number of years. You would get a little bit more money. You'd get like, you know, $8 to do an Adam game or whatever it was. And you're talking like that point, like an hour and a half, not a ton of money. So I would save up. And when I turned 16, about a month into driving, I'm driving my dad's pickup truck and I parked it poorly and I sideswiped a lady's, like, I think it was like a Volkswagen, not a bug, but the Golf. And did a fair bit of damage, like way more than I should have. Like I probably could have. And when I was trying to get out, like I was stuck to it. I was trying to get out of it, and did even more damage. And ended up, and I just sat there, and I was like, "All right, well, she's gonna come out." Like there's witnesses and stuff, but I probably could have left and lied about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I stuck around, and she was not upset. She understood, and it came time to pay, and. She went and got an estimate. And I forget what it was at the time. It was like $800 or something like that, which, again, this is 1989. And so it was like, yeah, right, $800. So I could have claimed it on my parents' insurance, but then their insurance rates go up, and it would have been about $800, $1,000 over the next couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And so my folks just said, no, just pay cash. Just give her the money.
Right.
I gave her the money. I two seasons of reffing at $2 a game, all those games. And they told me later, my parents were like, you know what? Like that actually broke our heart having you watch her, you know, watch you hand over. I guess I'm making more by that point, but it was probably about a full year of reffing at that point. I had to hand over to her and they're like, it really broke our heart, but you know, we wanted you to learn.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was like, at the time I wasn't thrilled, but I, even then I understood. I was like, well, it was my fault. It was nobody else's fault but mine.
Right.
So, and there was no dash cams then. So
yeah,
I should have invented them then.
Yeah. I do think that yes, there's a morality to it, but there are a lot of dishonest people out there. And well, having been burned before, you all ultimately already have your guard up, right? When you have had this happen before, this was a different direction and impact, but just the fact that if you have no witness and you have no camera, now it's just, you're relying on the honesty of a complete stranger. That's a scary prospect, right? Like you just, I mean, I'd like to believe that, but there's a reason we lock our door at night and lock our car when we're in a parking lot. It's because we don't trust strangers, and for good reason. I mean, my car's been broken into, not this car, my last car has been broken into more than one time. I've had all kinds of episodes. I've had my keys and wallet stolen out of a locked hockey dressing room. I mean, I've been down the road before of dishonesty enough that I'm going to, you know, basically be a little bit guarded in terms of who I believe that I don't know. Once I know people, right. You know, obviously you kind of, you know, tend to decide who you would trust and who you wouldn't trust with your stuff. But in the scenario of complete strangers, I mean, definitely my guard's up just because I've been burned, unfortunately.
It's weird because I love Canada. There's a lot of things about Canada that I love. I love Vancouver.
And I think I live in a very safe area. That's the other side.
You do live in a safe area, except for, I know what you're saying, but that would, I can't see that happening here in Germany. I can't, like, first of all, the drivers here, it's a cliche for a reason. They are fantastic. I am a better driver here because of the drivers here. I find myself now, I guess, so this is part of it, it's the age thing too. I'm not a super patient dude in life. And then, so driving in Richmond in particular, I'm never a huge fan. Like everything's when I was younger anyways, cause I haven't lived there in a while, but everything was a competition. Like you'd be at a light and some guy would kind of like, there'd be three people behind you in the left lane. And the guy'd pull up and pull around in the right-hand lane with a parked car ahead of you. You knew that was a race. You knew he was trying to get in front of you.
Right.
And who was that guy to get in front of you? And you're not going to let him get in. And, you know, like that, that happens. Or that happened when you were younger.
No, it still happens. Yeah, people do that.
Right, but it happens to you. But I don't know if you care now.
Like, no, I care way less. I'm just, I just like, whatever.
Yeah, that does not happen here. Turns are taken. Or if somebody is all of a sudden it pulls up and in the middle of nowhere puts their blinker on in traffic to get in the right lane, even though it's full, someone just lets them in. They realize, well, that person probably didn't know where they were going, and now they do. And now, yeah, go ahead, man. It wasn't they're trying to, you know, screw somebody over and skip the line. It was just, okay, yeah, go on. Now, one thing that Canada has to implement, which they do over here in Germany, which is fantastic. It sounds ridiculous. All the license plates, I think most European countries, but like, for example, the first two letters of our license plate are T, umlaut, U, T-U for Tübingen.
Okay.
Everybody's is. Everybody, if you are from here, so you drive around, you can see where people are from, which makes a massive difference. So if some dude from Frankfurt with an F on his license plate is trying to pull in front of you, you recognize that he's probably not from here. No problem. Go ahead, dude. You're not supposed to drive there, but go nuts. Whereas if it's from Tübingen, you know they're trying to screw you over, which right. No one ever does anyways.
Right, right. So no, like that makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense.
I'd like to see it happen in Canada. But anyways, I like driving here. If there's an accident, I can't see the need for dash cams in Germany. It just the stigma attached to lying in that situation would be so great that people just don't do it.
Okay, well, that's good. You're in an honest society.
There's stuff I don't like here. Don't get me started on that. It's not about honesty. This is one thing. Ooh, just to get really deep, is the culture here. The culture here, I'll be honest, it's weird, okay? My wife's German, and so I say that with full, not really full, I'm just being a jerk, but the culture here, what I respect the most is that they're very focused on responsibility first and rights are a distant second versus I have the right. You never have people say that. It's all about responsibility first. I have the responsibility to do this, to shovel my walk, to whatever it is, like when it's snowy, shovel the walk, put sand down, that kind of thing. Everyone knows they have that responsibility. It's not I have the right. And thus, we don't need dash cams here. There's other stuff happening. But
okay. You're better than us.
Nope, absolutely not. But in this one situation... shifting gears entirely shifting gears. You know how much I like airplanes, right?
Sure.
Some of the listeners do, at least, anyways. Maybe you don't, you don't listen.
You get from A to B much faster.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I'm not talking about air travel. I hate air travel.
You just like,
it better than, I like it better than getting scurvy on a Atlantic boat. I prefer that. Yes.
Right.
Aircraft in general, I'm a big fan of helicopters specifically, but
okay.
Aircraft in general. Have you seen the Top Gun Maverick trailer?
I have, yeah.
Like the new one that came out 3 days ago.
Oh, no, I saw the original one that they put out maybe a month ago. Yeah, I haven't seen the newer one. Yeah.
So it came out like 3 days ago. I've seen it, I don't know, 300 times. Okay, we're not supposed to talk about photography stuff on the show, but.
Okay, but.
Oh my God, is it phenomenal. I'm not suggesting that the movie will be good. I'm sure it will be good. I will like it. I mean, I'm a humongous fan of the original.
Me too.
Which I saw in the front row of the balcony at the Stanley Theater on Granville Street when it was still a movie theater. Now it's a theater.
Nice.
Just like that was 19. I was 12 years old and was like, well, that's it. Obviously, I want to be a fighter pilot like every other kid that age. Or a gay volleyball player. It was one or the other.
Yeah, it was a toss-up.
Yeah. And so at the time, did not even consider it to be homoerotic, that scene. It was just like, yeah, guys are playing volleyball with no shirts. That looks awesome. It still does. Still looks pretty awesome. And so...
And jeans. Anyways, isn't some of them wearing jeans?
Yeah, Maverick's wearing jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bit of an odd choice.
Yeah.
But regardless, great movie. Love the first movie. And then... The other trailer came out like, I don't know, a couple months ago or something like that, one you're talking about. Watched that a number of times. It's good, great trailer. But I was like, you know, you're a little bit, like you said earlier, that gun shy. It's like, you know, oh man, like it's been 34 years. You know, is it going to be good? And then the second trailer dropped. And I urge you, everybody, to watch it. Forget the storytelling part of it, whether it's going to be a good movie or not. Just watch how it is shot, how it is cut together, the music, the stings, like the music cues. I can't think of a better trailer I've ever seen. It is outstanding. Like I first of all, I love aircraft. I love the fact that. Like a P-51 Mustang shows up in the trailer and it's his, evidently. They said, oh, he showed up on set in his own P-51 Mustang, which I have on good, what's the word I'm looking for?
Authority. Yeah.
Good authority that he does, in fact, has in fact owned one of the very few P-51 Mustang trainers. Because a P-51 is a single-seat airplane from the 40s. There's the P-51, and then they came out later with the P-51D shortly thereafter, which was the plane. It's the one I think Chuck Yeager flew in the war, shot down five planes in one day, which is kind of impressive. And
sure
if you're looking for a book to read, definitely, I can't believe Chuck Yeager's still alive. I just saw that he's on Twitter, believe it or not, Chuck Yeager. Like, I can't believe he didn't die 60 years ago testing some planes. That's all the close calls he's had. But if you're looking for a good book to read, I highly recommend the book called Jaeger, where he talks all about breaking the sound barrier and his World War II exploits and being shot down, etc. And then the test pilot stuff, outstanding, but he talks about the P-51. So Tom Cruise evidently owns one of the very few two-seat, like the front back, like the... F-14 in the original Top Gun was like the two-seater.
Yeah.
Well, the P-51 was a single-seater, but they would make a few two-seaters to train the guys in because it was a very difficult plane to fly at the beginning. And so a few of those exist. There's actually one apparently not too far from my house, about 25 minutes from my house. Some guy owns one, which is probably, like they said, it's probably like an $8 million plane now because there's so few of them.
Right.
So last I heard a few, like 5 years ago, he'd take you up for a 15-minute flight for 500 euros.
Wow.
Yeah, which it must be more now. The insurance on that must be crazy.
Yeah,
Especially if some other P-51 kind of cuts you off in traffic and hits you. And then obviously then you lie about it. Then you're well within your rights to lie about it because it's an $8 million plane.
Right.
Then you're like, no, we were both turning. We were both changing lanes. you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so maybe...
Way to bring it around, yeah.
Yeah, tie that back in. Anyways, his P-51, so I Corolla did tell me that he was talking to him, and Cruz told him at a party one time that he owns a P-51, and so that was the one. I know he owns a two-seater, because I thought, holy cow, there's no way he's going to solo in a P-51. Like, that's as impressive as Tom Cruise is, which to me, he is the ultimate movie star. I am such a humongous fan of that guy and what he does for movies, et cetera. Like the skydiving stuff he does is outstanding. And so I know he's an accomplished pilot. However, just the fact that the insurance company would even let you insure him as an actor to solo in a P-51 is ridiculous. So I thought, there's no way. The shot of him in the making of, they have like a little 2-minute sort of behind the scenes of this movie, and he's in there flying the plane.
Wow.
So I highly recommend everybody go check that out and see what editing and everything that just all comes together. The camera work, as I understand it, there's very little CGI. It's a lot of practical photography, which they wanted to do, which is very rare nowadays, obviously.
Yeah.
Even the movie that I just saw recently, the Ford v Ferrari, which I loved because it was a movie. Like, it's just like an old time, hey, this is how you make movies, and like a film, like a real film. They use a lot of CGI because it's expensive to fill the stands at Le Mans, you know, in 1960s wardrobe.
Right.
You can't do it, film that many days. And so they had to CGI a bunch of that. And so even that's, you know, but a lot of it done practically, obviously. Anyways, check out the Top Gun Maverick trailer. Watch both of them. They're both outstanding.
On a movies for the holiday theme, have you seen Dolomite?
Yes, I have.
So good. Did you like it?
It is good.
Yeah. Reminded me.
It started a little bit slower than I would have liked.
A little bit slow, but I mean, it was so good, so entertaining, and reminded me so much. Like, as a kid, I remember, you know, when Eddie Murphy, Delirious, came out, and I mean, I must have watched it 200 times. Just thought it was the funniest thing ever. And then,
have you seen it lately?
Yeah, I haven't. It's on Netflix now, and I'm scared to watch it. Yeah, because it's one of those things when you're, I don't know, what year did that come out?
Oh, that gotta be 83?
Whenever I first saw it, I was probably 10, and it was something I shouldn't have been watching.
Part of it, yeah.
And there are a few scenes, like I think we all remember, like certain bits, like
Mr. T, the
ice cream man was my favorite, like just the bit that he does about dropping his ice cream in a pile of poop. But I mean, I just some of it I just absolutely loved. And so
farting in the bathtub.
In the fun spirit of how Eddie Murphy's kind of comedy used to be, it feels like, I don't know, I haven't watched anything in the last 10 years of Eddie Murphy. I liked, you know, 24-hour movies and all those kind of fun Beverly Hills Cop.
You mean 48 Hours.
Sorry, 48 Hours. So all those fun kind of cop movies, like, but now it's been a long time since that Eddie Murphy's been around, and this movie kind of brought it back to how the Eddie Murphy movies used to be. And I don't know, I was sort of nostalgic for it. But I was looking on Rotten Tomatoes thinking, I wonder how this got reviewed. And it's phenomenally well reviewed. It's like reviewed.
97 or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's 97 critics and 91 audience. So there you go. That's a pretty reliable measure of everybody likes this movie.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Now, on the same note, did you see the Night Before Christmas? Did we talk about this on the show last week?
Yeah, you talked. I think it was in your carry opening. On. Yeah, yeah. Horrible.
Yep.
I did not watch it based on your review. Yeah.
Yeah, you can go ahead and skip that. Random question for you. This came up tonight in conversation with my wife.
Okay.
So my kids are 6 and 8.
Sure.
Which means they've had, I don't do the math, 14 birthdays together.
Between them. Yeah.
Sure. I did not know this was a thing. How many kids are you supposed to invite to a kid's birthday party?
There's a number.
Okay, there you go. That's the answer I'm looking for. That's that's what I wanted to find out. When you have the kid's birthday party, How many? Yeah. And my because it came up, my wife casually threw out the thing that so and so is having a birthday party. He's turning 7, and thus he's inviting 6 kids, or 7 kids, I guess, our son and 6 more kids, because he's turning 7, so he's inviting 7 kids.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
And I said, "What you talking about?" And she looked at me like I don't know, something weird. I can't think of any analogy for that. She just looked at me like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, I mean, I said, I'm not." She said, "Well, we've done that for our kids. We did. I mean, first of all, I did not get involved in the inviting. I make the invite and then I walk away. I make the cake. Like, I do the invite and the cake, and everything in between is nothing to do with me."
Right.
And evidently, we've invited. Yeah, I don't know. What happens?
By that logic, exactly. When you get to be 15, you now have 15 kids or 25.
We don't have birthday parties anymore. But like now, what if I have one? I don't have 46 friends.
No, and the way I kind of look at it for kids, let's say the prime birthday party ages are 1 to 12. Okay, let's say that's the, and then after that you go to high school. Hopefully you don't do the same birthday party thing. So 1 to 12, I think when you're 5, you have more kids than when you're 10, 11, or 12. I think the number gets smaller as you get a bit older.
As you become more of a loser, yes.
Well, I think that, no, you tend to do kind of like a thing. Like when they get a little older, they like might want to have a sleepover, and then you have like three kids come over and you go to dinner, and then maybe you do something like a movie, and then they come and have a sleepover. And so the number gets smaller, but the event gets kind of a little bit bigger, instead of like, okay, when you're 6, you have 15 kids from your school and, you know, whatever sport you play or whatever else you do. And then you have like an hour and a half because they trash your house.
Exactamundo. Now, so there's more to the conversation. So I'm looking at her like, okay, I don't remember this ever happening. Like, I don't remember there being. And then she said, yeah, we'll look back at pictures. Go back and look at, which I'm like, I'm not going to. I'm just going, okay, fine. But then, and then she says, you know, sure, sometimes we would invite one or two extra girls so they wouldn't feel left out. Well, that's not the right number then, is it?
That's right. Yeah.
So how am I? Wait a second. Yeah, wait a second. So when my daughter turned 6, we invited 6 kids, but also 2 extra for 8 because otherwise, but 6 kids. And I said, but 6 is not 8,
right?
Which she is really familiar with. But is it me?
No, I think that might be something that got passed around amongst a couple of people, but we can put this one to the listeners. I don't think that's a thing at all. So.
This might be a German thing. It was her and I playing crib today in afternoon coffee, as we do, and she put the cards down and tried to Google it, and I was like, you know what, forget it. I have a show to do here, so I just smashed it out of her hand and said, fine, I'll take your word for it that the Germans do this. So like I said, great drivers. Gong show when it comes to birthday invites.
Okay, all right.
It's the price you pay. The price you pay for honesty. Speaking of that, this is just I don't know where this came from. Like 2 nights ago, my son threw up like I've never seen anybody throw up in their life.
Sounds like our trip to Mexico.
Oh my, yeah. Was it really? Okay, so this is my 6-year-old son, just complete like. Like 8 fire hoses in a row, like barely stopping to breathe. And I was like, wow, what happened there? What is your policy on throw up? Like, how do you take it?
What do you mean?
This is a major, I'm going to confess probably, I will say my biggest weakness. Like if you and I are ever in a fist fight, just, you should get one of those scratch and sniff stickers that smells like throw up and you win the fight. I will immediately start gagging and try not to throw up.
Really?
Even my own son, whom I love, who I would walk through a plate of glass for the kid. As soon as it's like my wife even knows this. Like there's some sense memory thing that happened when I was a kid that has never left me. And so I'm not grossed out by vomit. I don't care. Like I really don't care. I've slept in my friend's vomit before.
Okay. Maybe that's how you were traumatized.
No. It was long before then.
Did he have corn?
No, I don't know. It didn't matter. Like it was the smell that got me. It wasn't the fact that I was covered in it.
Right.
It was like, all right, well, that's fine. I, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we have done and do that is far worse than that. And so it's not that part of it. It is that smell that just completely hammers me. And so my wife knows this. So we both get up. This was the middle of the night, like 2 a.m. He decided to do this. And it's time to clean it up. Like, well, my wife knows that, like, I'm fully in support mode. Like, I'm downstairs with, like, doing the Silence of the Lambs with, like, the little mint jelly under my nose, you know? Because I'm like, I can't. Like, I will be throwing. We'll be doubling up on the throw up cleanup.
Okay. Yeah. You don't.
So
want
what
that.
Is that?
I think that's just an aversion that you've, you know, built up a sensory aversion to vomit because of a traumatic
experience.
Can it go
away?
Apparently not. Yeah. No, you know what you got to do? You got to desensitize yourself. Get everyone you know to like throw up in a small dish and then just kind of, you know, get 2 inches closer to it each day. Just kind of go down the line of the little vomit cups.
So eventually I'm doing the towel over the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even find that smell particular. Like, I don't think, like, I don't like, oh, that's a horrible smell. Like, there's worse smells. Yet for me, it just triggers something. And I've been through other traumatic incidents in my life, like really stuff you don't want to talk about on the Christmas show because it's really, really dark stuff. Not for me, but like I, you know, there was a lot of blood one time. Not my own, somebody else's. And no problem. Didn't get sick. Didn't look away. Just acted, right? And no problem at all. I mean, it didn't smell, I guess. I don't know. I don't remember the smells at all. I don't remember that being anything part of it. So just dove in. Help this person, and a doctor came on the scene and he went and threw up. And so it wasn't such, you know, it wasn't like it was bad. Yet my son throws up a little bit, and all of a sudden I'm in the corner, like just trying. It's terrible.
Desensitization therapy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And one last question for you before we wrap this up.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about Christmas.
Okay.
Because how old are your kids now?
10 and 12.
And when we started, so that would have put them, they would have been like 1 and 6 when we started.
What?
No, I'm just kidding. 1 and 3 when we started the show.
Sure.
Probably. I mean, that makes about
sense,
right? Yeah,
that makes sense, yeah.
How has Christmas changed since we started the podcast? Not from like when you're a kid, because there's when you're a kid Christmas. Obviously, that changes when you become an adult and then have kids, etc. But from the time from the very first Christmas episode when your kids were 1 and 3 till now. What do you notice?
Aside from, you know, their kind of type of things that they like and don't like.
Because the first couple of Christmases, like when your kids are one, there's not much going on. They don't really get Christmas. Right?
No, they're just kind of lumps, and you kind of get them a toy and then you pretend that they're playing with it.
Yeah. And then they throw up and you have to leave the room.
Yeah, that's right. And so, and now, I don't know. We'll see how this Christmas goes. I mean, Christmas for us has generally been just a good family kind of event because my wife has the 2 weeks off. I take some time off. So we try to do lots of things together. In the past, we've gone to Vernon the last number of years and kind of done all the outside wintry things. So it's been pretty consistent for the last number of years because we have a history of kind of doing the same things. This year we're not going. We have a hockey tournament and my daughter's in the Nutcracker again. So we have stuff that's keeping us closer to home this year. So we're going to do something different. So in terms of how it's changed, I'd say it's been pretty much the same, just the kids are getting bigger and maybe the different kinds of things that they like are a little different. Like no more are we going to the mall to do the Santa photo. They're kind of grown out of that. They don't want to be a part of that. I know some kids do it, you know, right through high school or whatever. My kids are like, yeah, we're not doing that.
Right.
So, and then instead of it being more toy oriented, like, you know, it's become more, I don't know, my daughter wants, you know, clothes and like, so she's teenage or on the verge of teenagehood. So her likes are different. She wants a phone and she wants clothes, right? So her interest is there. And my son has kind of gone into kind of, I guess, sort of now he's just kind of aware of, you know, cool and wanting some cool things, right? So
he gets that from school, though, not from home, right? The cool.
Yeah,
part.
That's from school entirely. Yeah. But he still didn't really. He still really doesn't care that much about clothes. He kind of likes shoes. So there's where they're cool. Like I want some cool shoes. You know, actually brushes his hair once in a while now. So there's that. But okay. No, my kids are mostly just bigger kids and they still just want to go do fun things as a family.
Nice.
How about
well,
you?
Well, it's good. I haven't seen a huge shift really. Cause Christmas is much different here, you know, for better or for worse. First of all, it's on the 24th. Christmas Day isn't really a thing here. It is for us. It is in our house. We split it all. They get half their stuff on Christmas Eve with grandma and grandpa and sorry, Oma and Opa, obviously, and the in-laws and whatnot. But it's actually shifted this year just because my wife's Oma, who is still alive, is not doing too well. She's kind of sick, and so that kind of like that was typically a tradition that we'd all get together with her. But so it's kind of splintered the family this year. Nothing bad, just, I mean, nothing, no one's mad at anybody. It's just logistics, right?
Right.
So my kids are a little disappointed in that, but so we do that. We 24th is the big day, and then we get to have a nice family Christmas on the 25th. We still do the stockings and all that to try to keep them, you know, up with the North American tradition. But other than that, I haven't noticed a big shift yet. But again, my kids are 6 and 8. I would imagine, I figured the shift would come from 8 to 12, would you start to realize we're excited about Christmas, but it's not quite the same? Like, who put the star on the Christmas tree this year for you?
I did.
There you go. See, I have a photo of your daughter doing it a number of years ago when she was 3.
And then it became a thing when they're, you know, like 8 and 6, they would have argued over who got to put it on.
Right.
Yeah, and now they're just like, whatever. Although, actually, my son, for the longest time, never cared about even putting ornaments on. So he's 10 now, and he was all over putting the ornaments on with mom and dad and kind of reminiscing about it. My daughter, being 12 now, who's been into it every year, this year was just like, too cool for that. So
right.
So the tides have sort of turned when it comes to some of that stuff. That's for sure. But they both still want to just watch Christmas movies. Like, their first thing in the morning is they run down to get the chocolate out of the advent calendar. So all those simple things, definitely. Although this year, my wife lost her mind on them because they went and ate ahead a chocolate on the advent calendar. The biggest one was like the 24th, and they conspired together without our knowledge and ate the giant chocolate out of the calendar. And that was so offside. My wife was so mad.
I'm taking their side on this one. I'm taking their side. I'm okay.
I was okay with it. I was like, but that was obviously a colossal no-no in my wife's upbringing. So
it is. Yeah. Well, sure. 3 daughters, man. Like your wife has 2 sisters, right?
Yeah.
So that was competitive. I'm sure that was competitive as who got the 24th.
You know? She was on the verge of taking both of their advent calendars to school and giving them away to other children.
Advent calendars.
Well, they each have one. They each have their own. Yeah. So given to them by their grandma. So I think my wife was a disrespectful in her opinion and I was just kind of giggling. I couldn't believe how mad she was. Like, this was the
gift that you get twice, though, because here, think of it this way. Well, she should only see one gift out of this, because she's not going to appreciate her own insanity. When's the last time your kids agreed on anything?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They conspired and worked together to do this. let's appreciate that for a moment.
Again, this is kind of why I almost found it, I mean, don't tell my wife, a little bit humorous of how angry she was about this. I had to talk her down. I had to talk her off the ledge for sure about this was not that. Again, it's hard to tell your wife it's not that big of a deal when she's clearly decided it's a big deal. Right? Like, that's just not, I can't say, hey, it's not that big a deal, but I was trying to convey that, I feel like there's more things we could go after them for than this one anyways.
Yeah. 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 Like, this is not even, Alan can't even smell throw up. So
yeah,
this is nothing. This is legitimately nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
All right. Time to wrap this up. But I wanted to, first of all, I wanted to say thank you to all the listeners out there. We're actually getting more every week. Like, I get notified when people follow us on certain platforms. I don't, podcasting is actually a little bit confusing how it works. By the way, I don't know if you know this.
Do you have some time to explain it to me? Because I don't understand.
Yeah, no, I know slightly more than you, which is zero plus a little bit.
Right? Okay.
And so, if you search us, if you Google Two Hosers Photo Show, you'll find us showing up on all these different sites. Like, you can go to, podcastorama.co.uk or something like that. I made that one up. I have no idea what they are.
But there's that's all a good these name, though. You should get that, domain. Grab that domain, yeah.
I'm going to hide that, and I'm going to sell hidden dash cams on that site.
Okay.
And so, but you can go to these sites, and evidently they sort of collect. They're an aggregator, as much as I can figure it out, of multiple podcasts where people could go click on their site and get to our same free show. Except I'm assuming that these people sell advertising on their site, and thus they would end up getting money from our content in theory. So I don't know how much we generate necessarily. Anyways, point being, in certain areas, like if you can go right to our podcast host, which I don't care if you do or not. I'd rather you just sign up through iTunes or something or wherever else you can find us and leave a review, which actually would be nice, positive or negative. I'm never one to beg for positive reviews. Any reviews are fine. We just appreciate the attention. Point being is I get notified when people subscribe on certain platforms, and we get people subscribing every week, which is still nice. 9 years on, like we're coming up on, next week will be the end of nine consecutive years of publishing a show every week. So it means a lot to us that people still subscribe.
Right.
Means even more that people are for example, buying the t-shirts. That I cannot tell you. Like I said, we get a little bit of money from that. We price it in a way that we get a tiny little bit of money for our effort. Certainly don't get rich. We can't buy vomit therapy with that money.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it'd be great. For example, that scene in Stand By Me still haunts me to this day. So, anyways, what I'm saying is, Adam and I'm going to go ahead and speak for you, Adam.
Sure.
We absolutely appreciate the community out there.
Can you do my voice?
We appreciate it.
It's deeper.
I'll fix that in post.
Lower.
I'll fix
go
that
in post. Go deeper. Yeah.
Okay. I say we, it's really I see you talking out there to each other. I see listeners who do not know each other in real life, IRL, talking and commenting and liking each other's photos. That means the world to me. I know some of you have even gone so far as to meet in person. People that you did not know have gone, oh, hey, I'm traveling to wherever that is, and let's meet up and go take some photos. This legitimately brings a smile to my face, and probably Adam's too.
Sure. This is the first time I'm thinking about it.
Well, for me, it's especially in what we would call these crazy times when... You know, I don't think these times are that crazy, to be honest, but it's negativity. It seems to be the order of the day. It seems to be what is highlighted, what is focused on. I don't think there's any more animosity now than there ever was before, whatever you call it. I think that it's just that there's an outlet for it now on a widespread platform, and it sells. Which is the reason I'm not on Facebook anymore, but that's for a different show. It sells. This animosity and this negativity, it sells. And so people think that's all that's out there. But trust me, I see you. I see you being friendly to people that you don't know, that I'm guessing there's no way you can all agree politically, and yet you're friendly to each other, and this means the world to me. I like the fact that when we shine a light on the positive things out there, it really makes a difference. So, thank you, everyone. Keep doing it. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you sharing your photos with us, with each other. Let's do that. Keep doing that in 2020. Are we calling it 2020, Adam?
Sure.
It could be confusing because there's that ABC show, right?
No, 2020.
2020.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, for Adam and I, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yep.
All the best to you and your families. Enjoy the season. You can add something, Adam.
Okay. I second that motion.
No, forget it. I'll cut it there.